no day finishes these days without us being in this new era of the Ukraine war. As an artist from Kosovo, what does the Ukraine war change for Kosovo?
Well, I think not much for Kosovo, but I guess it is a reminder for Europe mostly that, you know, the war is, has been, it is, and it will be present in those parts. You know, everybody was believing that the war concept was gone after the Second World War, and then Europe somehow got free of this idea of the war, but then it came back in 90s in ex-Yugoslavia, and although the war was happening in a very harsh way, I guess for many Europeans that was very far away, because they did not consider Milosevic as a big threat. So it was some, for most of the Europeans, it was some war between some Balkan tribes there, and you know, yeah, it's terrible what's happening there, but it is in between them. Well, now with the war in Ukraine, they, you know, Europe finally got mobilized and is reacting unified somehow in a good way to the war in Ukraine, because also they are afraid of Putin, of course, and they are, because Milosevic was not Putin, and he didn't have that power that Putin has now. So Europe, of course, Europeans are afraid themselves, and that's why they are now unified and reacting in a proper way. So this war, I think, it for us it brings back the memories of 90s, and of course we are sensitive. I guess everybody is very sensitive, but to us, it really brings back the memories, and it reminds us that the danger of a war is always there, and we should not forget. That's why I think theater has an important role to play, because it makes us aware that, yes, there will be always, you know, monsters who will decide to kind of put a nation on fire, or to put a continent on fire, as it is happening now. Somehow you have a mad leader, a dictator, who for nothing can, you know, just blow up the world.
Du hast Erfahrung mit Diktatoren, mit autoritären Regimen. Können wir von dir, von der kosovarischen Erfahrung über Serbien und damit über serbisch-russische Beziehungen, die ja immer sehr eng waren, und die Bedrohung für das Kosovo lernen? You have experience, life experience in dictatorships. Can we learn from a Kosovaran, from your perspective, in the relationship to Serbia, which is a close ally of Russia? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would say that the Kosovo politicians are like really hardly trying to kind of highlight this connection of Serbia with Russia, because of course now Russian reputation is completely damaged. So they are trying, Kosovo politicians are desperately trying to put this, to highlight this this connection, but I don't think that's the right direction. I mean, for me, the right direction is to try to heal, to help Serbian society, to help Serbian society as well get out of this national ties that, or nationalistic ties that they have with Russians. And that's why it is important for Europe to, yes, help Kosovo into this European way and European integration, but then help also Serbia into that direction, so they should work in both, with both societies, because I guess Serbia, yes, it was source of crisis in 90s, and Serbia was exporting wars in 90s. It is still a source of crisis and of tensions in Bosnia and Herzegovina, in the north of Kosovo, But then Serbia somehow, it is also key to peace and stability in this area. So without a democratic and normal Serbia, there will be no peace in the Balkan as well. So I mean, we are neighbors, so we cannot pretend that, okay, we'll be in European Union and let's leave Serbia to shit and, you know, alone in the misery. So I think it's responsibility of everybody to try to democratize Serbian society and Serbian state, so to say.
Aber das ist ja sehr interessant. Ihr neues Stück über Handke, da kriegt Handke sein Fett weg und auch Serbien kommt unter die Räder. Und trotzdem ist das Stück in Serbien aufgeführt worden. Wie machen Sie das? Wie verstehen Sie das? Tja, also Systemkritik, Diktatorenkritik zu machen und trotzdem für einen Ausgleich zu plädieren. This is very interesting what you say. You have your new play and Handke gets a lot of criticism and Serbia logically as well. And at the same time, you want to promote the reconciliation. How does that work?
It works because to me, and I think it's not only to me, but for many, many people believe that, in fact, Handke was making the biggest damage to Serbian society than to anyone else. I mean, by promoting war criminals, by taking the side of Milosevic, by having this speech in his grave. In fact, he made big damage to the Serbian society because somehow he created a I don't know the word in English. So, what basically he prevented the Serbian society to confront themselves with the war crimes and to move forwards, because people, you know, everywhere in Europe, I guess, but also in Serbia, they believe in authorities. So suddenly, after the war, there was this famous guy, this famous Austrian writer and a Nobel winner who was protecting Serbia and who was denying genocide. What did it mean for ordinary people? They said, yeah, he's right. So you see, we didn't commit crimes. The Srebrenica didn't happen. So, in fact, Handke is the biggest enemy of Serbia, and we say in the play as well, the Serbian society needs to be de-Handkeized. So that is how I see this process. And of course, when we speak of Handke, we are not targeting Handke itself, but I think the phenomenon of Handke. Because yes, you can be a good writer and be an asshole as a human being, but for me the main problem started when he got a Nobel Prize and Ibsen Award and a Nobel Prize, because those prizes that come from well-known institutions, they somehow legitimized his statements on war and in ex-Yugoslavia, and they created fog somehow among people. So, and Handke, you know, he's good writer, and he was using this stylistic devices, the question mark, Srebrenica happened, and then he would say, did Srebrenica happen, and things like this. So his question marks were not there to really investigate the truth, to know the truth, but they were there to create fog, to create to kind of disseminate, to lose their, you know, to make people go away from the truth, because when we speak of Srebrenica, it is well documented, and you have to be either a mad or idiot not recognize what happened there. So in fact, he was supporting engineers of the genocide in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and then of those who made crimes in Kosovo intentionally. So it was his choice. He was not there to ask questions as a writer, but he just decided to be an ally of the war criminals, of Milosevic, of other criminals there.
Viele Deutsche würden wahrscheinlich denken, dass es unmöglich ist, in Belgrad ein heftig anti-Handgestück, ein brutal oder frontal angreifendes Stück aufzuführen. Und Sie haben das gemacht. Was waren die Reaktionen? Most Germans would probably think that it is impossible to stage an anti-Handke play in the center of Belgrade. You did it. What were the reactions?
It's true. I mean, he has the status of being saint there, so he is an authority there, and you can kind of blame any Serbian saint, so to say, religious saints, but not Handke. That's what we've been told.
Aber man würde erwarten, dass gar nicht die Erlaubnis kommt, da mit einer Theatergruppe hinzugehen. One would expect that you don't get an allowance to stage your play.
Yes, but then, you know, we somehow, we had this credit because for many years we were being critical to the Kosovan society, to the post-war atmosphere in within the Kosovo society. So we got some kind of credibility. So we were not some nationalist who would go and like tell Serbian society that they should liberate or free themselves from Handke. So we are people who have credibility and who were critical also to the post-war this post-war transition in Kosovo. So they somehow accepted us, I guess, because of this role that we had in for many years in here as a theater makers. So it was tension, around the theater you had no posters or anything like this, so it was more or less like inviting people underground to a secret religious meeting. Of course, police was there in civil uniforms, and there was a plan of evacuation, and we were aware of that plan. So if some nationalist and extremist would come to protest there or to kind of enter violently the theater, there was a plan how we should take the actors from backstage and go to a van, and the police would take us somewhere else. But luckily, and I see this as a good progress and as a good sign for the Serbian society as well, that there was no incident. So yes, in the audience you could see tensions. There was a wall basically between the actors and the audience. I felt that people were not feeling very comfortable to confront this kind of topic that is direct. So I absolutely was not being politically correct. So it was like, let me finally say what I think I should say. And I'm happy we made that show, two shows there.
Mögen Sie Gefahr? Mögen Sie es gefährlich und auch für die Schauspieler? Do you like it with danger for yourself and your actors?
No, of course, I'd rather not. Who would be wanting to put himself in danger? But I guess theater makes more sense in circumstances like this, and you start to believe that, it makes sense why we are making theater. So it makes sense that we are communicating these topics directly with the audience. And for me, theater or topics like this are like when you go to a doctor and he is trying to heal your wound. It hurts, yes, and you'd rather push the doctor away, kick him out, but you know that in the long term he's healing you, so he's trying to heal your wound. And that's for me, the theater. I mean, yes, sometimes it hurts to be confronted with some truth, but in long term, the society and you as an audience member, you are healing yourself from the demons of the past, from the actual demons, from everything.
Die deutsche Theaterszene ist sehr gespalten über den Ukraine-Krieg. Deutschland zu pro-russisch, Deutschland zu wenig pro, Deutschland zu pro-russisch, Deutschland nicht anti-russisch genug. Wer hat recht? The German theater and director scene is very split about Germany being too much pro-Russian in the past years and still, or not anti-Russian enough. Who's right?
No, I don't. I mean, this anti and or pro, I think those are very extreme kind of positions, and I was not very happy, and I think it was wrong decisions for many European cultural institutions that they, when the war in Ukraine started, they started to kick out Russian artists or to ask them to publicly declare if they are against the war and if they are supporting Putin and not. And this is some sort of hypocrisy that I find in many European societies and Western approach, because because Hanke was doing precisely this. I mean, he was supporting war criminals, he was supporting Milosevic, while Europe was, or Western or Europe was tolerating in the name of artistic freedom, saying, well, he's an artist, he's a writer, and writer can put questions, and then he's free to artistic freedom, and even Alfred Jelinek and Otto Strauss and he and there, they were like justifying his positions. While now, when the war in Ukraine started, they kind of mobilized themselves and they were saying, no, European institutions, you saw, I mean, in some Italian universities that they were banning Dostoevsky. I mean, this ridiculous, stupid things that they were, I mean, actions against Russian artists. So I think that is some sort of a wrong position to me. Yes, we need to have curiosity for Ukraine now. Yes, we need to know more about Ukrainian society, Ukrainian literature, because now suddenly everybody is doing some readings of Ukrainian authors. Everybody is trying to bring some, to invite some Ukrainian authors. I think this curiosity should be permanent among us. So we don't need to have a crisis of war in order to increase our curiosity about some zone. We should have natural curiosity for German, for French, for Ukrainian, for Tajikistani societies, and this is lacking in Europe. So that is what I think we should engage and invest more as Europe.
Yes. Bin ich mal provokativ und sage, es ist sehr allgemein und könnte fast aus dem Sozialismus noch kommen. So hört sich das für mein Ohr an. Aber was heißt das für den Krieg? Was sagt jemand wie Sie? Wie kann man den Krieg beenden, verkürzen? Okay, your last words resonate very even post-socialistic in a way, very peaceful, but somebody like you, what would you think, how can the war be ended or shortened, this Ukraine war, from here, seen from Kosovo?
No, I mean, in the end, I'm a Kosovar, somebody who was lucky enough to benefit from the European aid and from European bombs, if you wish. So no matter, I mean, that now I am, pacifist, and I don't believe in a war as a tool, but somehow I'm here, I'm enjoying this freedom, I'm able to write and to function as artist thanks to the bombs that were thrown into the Milosevic forces. So I guess in some situations, and it is the situation now in Ukraine like that to kind of stop a mad person, a dictator, a monster like Putin, he is, you need to fight. So, and I guess what we need now is to try to help Ukraine in every direction we can. I mean, weapons, money, anything like that. But then, of course, you know, and this is the topic of my next play, it's called Negotiating Peace. After every war, you know, willing or not, you need to sit and negotiate peace. So if it's possible to do this before the war, that's a miracle. But of course, you need to have both sides. You cannot negotiate peace by yourself. So this negotiations will be there after the war.
Kann der Krieg nach Kosovo zurückkommen wegen dieser ganzen Ukraine-Sache? Can the war return to Kosovo because of if the Ukraine war develops negatively?
Well, not only to Kosovo, I guess. It is a threat to the whole Europe, and I think yes, it could. I want to believe that no, and I have been working as an artist to push wars away from the region, but of course it you know, wars unfortunately have been with us for so many years, and they can always return. People are a bit relaxed because there is NATO in Kosovo, so Kosovo is not in NATO, but NATO is in Kosovo, and they believe that Europe has power to stop any escalation of the war in north of Kosovo, and I don't think Serbia has that power that it had in '90s in the time of Milosevic to start another war. So, you know, realistically, I don't see any potential for an escalation of a war, but it doesn't mean that this, you know, realistic visions I have cannot be proven wrong. I mean, as I said, who was believing that after the Second World War there would be a war in Europe again? But then it started, and then it's starting again in Ukraine, and so we have to be prepared, and we have to kind of work for peace, believing that the war might be around.
Kosovo ist ein gutes Beispiel. Können wir lernen von Kosovo? Kosovo hat überhaupt kein Gas von Russland, das es bezieht. Can we learn from Kosovo? Kosovo doesn't take any Russian gas.
Yes, but then you have to train yourself to live without electricity. Or with some reductions during the winter, and you have to learn yourself and train yourself to, you know, wear coats during the winter, and if you are able to adapt yourself to those models of life, yes. So it's not the best example to be taken. Yes, no Russian gas, but then also not very comfortable lifestyle, I would say so.
So maybe we are, das heißt, wir stehen vielleicht vor einer Kosovoisierung von Westeuropa. Are we standing in front of a Kosovoization of Western Europe?
But not in a bad sense. I mean, not that, you know, the life here has been going on. I'm, of course, the society is facing many, many problems and many obstacles, and aiming for Kosovo to join Europe, and you could see that there has been a huge progress. And yes, you could say how it's possible for an artist to recognize that or to say that, but I am a generation of 90s, so I can make a kind of distinguish that period of fear, of oppression, of violence, and this period where the life somehow goes on. I mean, yes, you can breathe, you go out of the Grand Hotel and you are not afraid that some Serbian police will beat you up. You could enter this hotel, and in that period it was nearly impossible to enter. So
in the 80s.
In 90s, basically, 90s, because it was especially 90s, 7, 8, 9, then it was full of this paramilitary Serbian forces. So I wouldn't say that, you know, Europe should take Kosovo as a model, but maybe as a model of bravery and the persistence for freedom. I mean, those people show that they wanted to be free and they achieved to be free. And I think this word should be kind of used more often in Europe as well, the concept of being free. So yes, Europe, some of the, or most of the European societies are free, but then can we speak of real freedom in Hungary or in Poland, where the church is somehow taking the control, or let's say Ukraine now? So if we start to value more freedom, I think then there will be a better future, I guess.
Das ist sehr interessant. Ich habe den Eindruck, über Krieg, über Konflikt lernt man mehr über Freiheit als im Alltag der Demokratie. That's very interesting. I get the sense hearing you talk that in experiencing war and conflict, one learns more and maybe quicker about democracy than in the democracies themselves.
Yes, because then you have the commodity of not seeing the, you know, real democracy, so to say, and exercising the democracy. You take things for granted, you know, while in here it is like bread and water. You have to be practical and you have to learn fast in order to achieve where you are aiming to achieve. And this society had simple goals. I mean, big but simple and clear. Until 1999, the main goal was freedom. So everybody was working and contributing to that goal. So single goal, let's achieve freedom, let's be free. When this goal was finally achieved in 1999, then people would say, yes, we are free, but we don't have our own state. So, you know, we don't feel secure now. Let's have this country as independent. Then the next goal was of being independent. This was achieved somehow. It's not fully 2008. So now the next goal is, yes, we are independent, but we want security. We want to be part of European Union. So let's contribute to that goal. So politicians, civil society, everybody is somehow contributing for Kosovo to achieve this goal of entering this European family, which is above all matter of feeling secure in a bigger family, but also then sharing some of the European values, including democracy. So I think those practical goals have helped and are helping this society to move forward very fast. And the changes you can see here are really like in some Chaplin movies, very fast. You know, maybe you don't understand exactly what is going on, what is being said, with some signs, with some gestures, but yeah, things are moving and the society is moving. Of course, many obstacles, problems that we are facing in daily life. And I think one of the main challenges is that the dossier of Kosovo is still not closed, meaning that most of the energy is basically being spent in those political negotiations with Serbia. So instead of focusing in economy, in health, in education, in culture, so main energy of the government is being spent in having to negotiate with Serbia, having to negotiate for Kosovo to enter European Union. And this is like a bit tiring, you know, but you know, it is as it is.
Eine letzte Frage. Europa soll stärker auf Kosovo aufmerksam werden. Hier war jetzt die Manifesta, eine große Ausstellung, ja, so eine Art kleine Documenta hier in Kosovo. Hat das was gebracht für das Land? A last question on the Manifesta. Europe should look closer and more intense to Kosovo to understand. Has the Manifesta brought anything positive in this regard?
I'm not the best person to answer this question. I was and I am still very critical to Manifesta being happening here, not because of the Manifesta itself and the concept of Manifesta, but the way how Kosovo institution somehow welcomed Manifesta, which means welcoming worth of more than 4 million euros, and I'm a bit
4 million euros,
yes, of course. So it's a matter of cash, and they were promising lots of you know, this wonderful projects, and that they are going to bring back the public spaces to the citizens of this country. As we were not here, and as we didn't know what the public space, the concept of public space is, and they are going to rebuild and to reconstruct some public buildings and bring them back to the community. But in reality, you know, what you see some exhibitions in this Hotel Grand, and then some colors in some other parts of the city. And then paradoxically, just 100 meters or from Hotel Grand, we have our theater for like 20 years now, a basement there that has no heating at all. So it's been 20 years we work in concrete, in a primitive conditions, just because nobody was willing to invest some 50,000 euros for normal seats and for some heating system and for some wood instead of concrete. And so those are my dilemmas, and this is my critique mostly to the Kosovo institutions, that when it comes to the, you know, internationals, they often play with this or use this inferiority complex, and they open their doors, while us, the Kosovo artists who struggle every day to make art in this country and to promote this country and to kind of help this country move forward, and we are somehow neglected, and we are even often seen as traitors.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.